Hello, my name is John Barry. You are listening to Type Radio. Now we're talking. Type Radio
FM. Now we're talking.
We're at Itaipai 2006 in Lisbon, Portugal. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
And we're here with John Barry. Welcome.
Thanks.
The first question is, what is the first thing you do when you start working?
That depends on the job. It depends on the project. I suppose the first thing I do is ask questions. Presumably, I have a client. I mean, we're talking about professional jobs. So I ask them what the project is supposed to do, what it's supposed to accomplish. To try to get them away from, oh, it should look like this, or it should sound like this. No, what is its ultimate purpose? Try to dig down beyond the surface, because it may turn out that the way to go is up to the surface from an entirely different direction and come out somewhere else from different from where they thought they were going. This is there's an art to that, and it doesn't always go well. People don't always like to be questioned that way, but that's what design is about. It's about thinking things through. It's not about decoration and surfaces. In theory, in best case, that's what I do first. Sometimes what I do first is take a nap. You never know.
Do you have rituals?
Not really, no. I don't put all the pencils on the certain ways on the tape. Actually, the biggest ritual is probably trying to clear some space in my desk. But no, I don't basically have rituals.
Can you describe your workspace?
Cluttered. It's a home office. It's I could use an extra room just for my library, but unfortunately it's in that room, so it does get rather cluttered. Lots of light, at least. And I'm always working on schemes to expand and create a clean, uncluttered workspace, because my brain is cluttered enough. I actually do need to have the visual environment more organized and more spare than it usually is in order to unclutter my brain. But that's not usually the way it works. Often what I do when I'm mulling over a problem is simply get out, go have a cup of coffee, go for a walk, because just moving away from where I'm concentrating is very good for loosening my brain. You know, immediately, just walking up the street. Four blocks away, there are three coffee houses. On that four-block walk, I'll suddenly go, oh, okay, that's what I need to do next, and that's what I'm forgetting. Things that I could sit there in my chair for hours and not think of, not remember. Sometimes it can look like I'm just avoiding working by going and sitting, drinking coffee all day up on 15th, but it is actually functional, too.
Is that how you would say you relax?
Yes. I like sitting and watching the world go by in an interesting neighborhood, so that's how I relax and how I work sometimes at the same time.
Do you play a musical instrument?
Not really. I've tried various musical instruments, and I didn't grow up in a musical family, so I didn't assume that it didn't come naturally to me, the idea that I could do anything melodious. In school, I took the drums because that was the farthest thing from any kind of melody, and I didn't stick with it. The one instrument that I did have found that I could play fairly well actually follows on from that. I studied the marimba, Shona music in the marimba from Zimbabwe. The trouble is, it's something done as an ensemble, and I found that I just never had time to keep up, and it wasn't fair to the other people in the class I was in and then any group I would be playing with. I loved the music, and I loved playing it, but not in this lifetime, I guess.
What sparked your interest in typography and design?
I have no idea. Everything I've done in my life, I've come to sideways. I did not study design. I did not study type. I didn't even consider design when I was in school. I had no idea that I would end up doing this. When I look back, I was always interested in publishing of one kind or another, and I was interested in both the words and the visual images.
To me, you were always like interested in both.
Always
sides?
Both. Yeah. Always both. And I've never seen made any distinction between them. I think it's very weird that most people are either visual or verbal, not both. they're just part of the same thing to me. I can look back and go, oh yeah, I took art lessons when I was a little kid, and we had a ninth grade school trip to Colonial Williamsburg, which is a recreation of an 18th century town in Virginia. Everyone had to take one particular of the reconstructed workshops and make that their study for mm-hmm. several days, and I took the print shop. And it's only looking back that I can go, oh, of course I took the print shop. But I didn't know I would do that. Mm-hmm.
But what did you study then? Sorry.
Well, I went to school in the San Francisco Bay Area starting in 1967, so I studied life and music and what was going on. I ended up as a history major because by the time I had to specialize, I had already taken half the courses in history that were required, and I still wanted to take more. But I never assumed that what I studied would have a direct effect on what I ended up doing. Unless you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer, mostly a doctor, there was no point in specializing. It's a general education that you want. And I think that's equally true if you're going to a design school. I mean, my experience with the design schools is entirely after the fact. Coming into them, a little bit of teaching, a lot of talking to people and working with people, but not having been a student myself. But I see no reason why a design school should be any more specialized than a general college or university. That is, it has a focus, it has a purpose, but you've got to be a human being, you've got to be a citizen before you can be a designer. What good is it to be a designer if that's all you are? What good is it to be a designer, especially a designer of printed matter, if you don't read? Or if you don't read and don't know anything? As far as I'm concerned, it works both ways. I think design, in the larger sense, should be part of a liberal education. It should be a basic education in the 21st century, because we live in a designed world, and we design it. So we have to know how to do that. So that is a fundamental. It's not a specialty for a small group of people. It's something that everybody needs to know. But at the same time, the people who have been traditionally part of that smaller specialty of the design community and the design profession need to stop thinking small and know everything about a general education. You have to have that, and you have to keep doing it. It doesn't stop when you get out of school. You have to learn history, not only your own, but everyone else's. You have to learn science and keep up with it. You have to learn about cultures other than your own. You have to learn several languages, which is not usually the case in the United States. Most Americans are monolingual at best.
I mean, this might sound naive, but sometimes if you maybe working on a design problem or coming up with a solution, if you know too much, then sometimes that hinders you in coming up with a...
I don't find that's true at all. And sometimes I have to get away from it. It's just the same way as getting away from a cluttered office. But I don't think that knowing too much gets in the way.
Not knowing, but if you have too many references, like, oh, I've seen this, I've seen that, and then you can't move further than that because you feel restrained, or...
It can happen. Of course it can happen. But I think we worry too much about being original.
Is that possible or not?
To worry too much about being original?
No, is it possible to be original? Not really.
Well, that's a philosophical question, and each of us is original because each of us is unique. But yeah, it's also the fact that everything has been done, or the, I don't know, fact, but it seems clearly arguable that everything has been done, but also... each person comes up with a unique perspective, and that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's what we exist for, is not self-expression, but to be who we are and to do what it is that we can do. I think self-expression is extremely overrated, especially in design schools and art schools, and it is an important thing, but because it's so overrated, we give it so much emphasis, I'm more inclined to go the other way and say, forget about self-expression. You're not here to express yourself. You're here to communicate something. It may be something that you want to communicate yourself. It may be your own ideas, your own words. I often do that because I'm working both the design and the writing and the editing. But it may be someone else's. If you're a professional designer, it's probably a client's, whether that's a commercial client, as it usually is in the United States, or a public cultural client, as it can be sometimes in the United States, but that's more frequent in Europe. But it's still a client. It's still, you're there for a purpose. In the 90s, I was trying to do too many things at once for a while. I was art director for Ed Marquand Books in Seattle, which specializes in art books and museum catalogs. These days, even more, just museum catalogs. Does beautiful work. It was a great small office to work in. I was also on my own, didn't really have a title, but I was the main designer for a small international poetry publisher outside Seattle, Copper Canyon Press. And I found that I couldn't do justice to both of them at the same time. I was just overextended. And I ended up quitting Marquand and sticking with doing the Copper Canyon work, which paid, you know, a pittance. And it was a bad career move. But ultimately, I thought, these are the books that are going to matter in 500 years. When I design books for that press, it's because they publish really important writers. And although obviously I'm designing them interior and covers to sell the book, to get the book out to its audience, I'm really designing it for the person who will pick it up in a used bookstore or a yard sale or whatever the equivalent is 100 years from now. I was very gratified the first time I saw a book I had designed in a junk store. I thought, now I've arrived.
Even though somebody was giving it away?
Yeah. Sure. Well, that's the other side of it.
How could they do that?
Yeah. Then you look at the price and think, oh, yeah.
You know, I don't remember the price. And I also don't remember whether I bought it. I might have. There is one copy of an early book that I designed that I bought coverless, jacketless, because it makes a great working copy. I don't care about that copy. I can show it to people. But I'm more likely to think, well, no, I'll leave it here for somebody else to find, stumble over, and discover.
But was this after the normal print was like sold out? Was it available in the regular as a new book in the bookshop still?
I don't remember. It's been too long. Mm. Yeah, I'd rather see it. I'd rather stay in print, of course, but
yes.
There is that mixed feeling when you see a book that you know they could be buying new in a used bookstore. But that's the way it works. You know, I've bought lots of my books in used bookstores because I was a poor student and couldn't afford them. So that's fine. Mm. They're out there. They're reaching people.
Do you have a favorite book?
No. There's about 100 favorite books.
Do you have 100?
Probably, but then
but there's just not one like standing out which has a special story or.
No.
Okay, the first one. Letter A, starting with A.
I don't know. Actually, this is not precise. It's not my favorite book, although it is a favorite book of mine, but it's an interesting project that I'm working on and will be diving into when I get back to Seattle. It's the 25th anniversary edition of a novel by John Crowley called Little Big. Very well-beloved novel. It's a fantasy. It's got a lot of levels and layers to it. And we're doing, it's a small press, tiny press, doing this special edition for 25 years. It's got, it's also incorporating artwork by Peter Milton, a wonderful engraver and printmaker who did not know John Crowley. The art was not done for the book, but the publisher of the small press and Crowley were walking through the Seattle Art Museum one day when Crowley was in town, turned a corner and saw this exhibition of Peter Milton's work, and they both independently said, Little Big. It just fit together. Mm-hmm. They got in touch with Peter Milton and gave him a copy of the book. He went, oh, yes, certainly, of course. So now what I'm trying to do is create a book that will work both as a novel, a fairly sumptuous novel, but still one that you can read comfortably, and as a book of art that will do justice to the art without becoming a big, heavy tome on slick paper. So I love that kind of challenge. Actually, that book I described, Finding First in a Used Bookstore or in a Sale, was similarly a book where I was dealing with art and, in that case, poetry, trying to make, they were paired, but what makes a comfortable poetry book and what makes a comfortable art book is almost diametrically opposed. It's just going in opposite directions. So I have dealt with that kind of problem before. So I've been rereading the book and thinking about ways to make it a special edition while avoiding the publisher's tendency to want it to be over-decorated. So we'll see how that goes.
Do you have a hero?
No. In different contexts, it depends. In typography, in some ways, Jan Tschichold, although I have a feeling if I had ever, if our lives had overlapped and I'd met him, I would have been arguing with him a lot. But I've learned more from him than anybody else. Also, Jack Stauffacher, who is alive and a friend of mine, a wonderful printer in San Francisco, who's just in the process of going through all of his 60 years of stuff. He's donating to the Bancroft Library at University of California will be buying it. He's been in the same studio for 40 years in North Beach in San Francisco. So, and he's in his 80s. He bicycles to work. He doesn't play bicycle polo anymore, but he's incredibly active. I mean, he'll be around at age 100, I'm sure, still creative. Both his approach to design and his energetic approach to teaching and preserving traditions are things that I love. And an old friend of his, who I never knew, Adrian Wilson, who wrote the book on designing books, that's one of the best books on designing books. I learned a lot from him, and I think from Jack secondhand before I knew Jack through that book. In other contexts, sometimes in literature, a sort of combination of literature and politics, I think Eduardo Galeano is one of my heroes. The first time I heard him speak in the United States, when his English wasn't very good, but he was completely able to communicate, I thought, can we just elect him president of our country, please?
Typeradio.org